in the middle of an ongoing war. We love to have the big guys join the fight.
Roll out! Wow, that was corny when I said it out loud.
Da 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 da!
You sound insane. You realize that?
Yeah.
The whole world gone crazy.
Are you serious?
Ladies and gentlemen,
it's showtime.
It's one of my favorite subjects here on Mad About Movies. It never fails to create a little bit of fireworks during some Transformers talk. So here we are, once again, to talk Transformers. This time, it's the rise of the dawn of the fallen of the dark side, the Bumblebee. I can't wait to talk about it with you two, Brian and Richard. I'm Kent, and welcome back in to the main feed of Mad About Movies. We got a really fun time coming on the VIP feed this week. Let me preview that. Last Action Hero, because we are talking all-time flops this year in the VIP. Last Action Hero, starring Arnold Schwarzenegger. Big summertime movie star. Not a lot of success with that one. And spoiler alert for that episode, it's a really bad movie. So get excited for that episode. VIP is dropping this week there. MadAboutMoviesPodcast.com/VIP. All right. Guys, Transformers time again. When was the last time, Brian, we talked Transformers? Did we do a Bumblebee episode? I can't even remember.
I'm pretty sure we did a Bumblebee episode in
2018 was that movie. Yeah. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so.
That was the one where the robot just had that invisible friend for half the movie.
Yeah. Actually, invisible nemesis, I think, right?
That's true, yeah. Yeah. It was hard to tell because it was invisible.
It was just a floating pair of sunglasses.
Kind of a guess, yeah. Really.
Yeah.
It's hard to put context.
Side note, what if they actually cast John Cena as the Invisible Man in a movie?
That would be incredible.
That would be the most amazing.
Good bit.
They could bring self-aware. Back the Universal Monsterverse.
So Bumblebee was 2018. It feels like so much longer ago than that to me since we've done these. What sticks out the most was Texas inventor Mark Wahlberg.
Noted
inventor Mark Wahlberg.
True. Fair point.
When you see him, you think, he's got Einstein level intellect.
That guy should be on Shark Tank is what I always think every time I see him.
Well, honestly, probably should. I could think of one investor that's probably going to pick up whatever he does.
That's true. How angry was Cuban that he didn't invest in Wahlburgers? He's like, dang, got a reality show and everything.
I'm in the middle of the woods in New Mexico right now, and there's a Wahlburgers like 6 minutes from me. How weird is that? I haven't been yet. Well, Mark is a Dallas guy now, I think, by the way. Wahlberg, he's a for real Texas inventor. I think he's got a place in the Big D now.
Does he really?
So I've heard. Yeah,
he was a violator of my rule about if you have the money to have a home basketball gym, it has to be at least a full half court gym. You cannot have the wall on the corner thing. It drives me crazy.
He has a just for feet court.
Yep. I hated it. Made me very angry. You have so much money, dude.
That house he was selling with that in it was like $75 million or something, right?
You can afford the extra 6 feet for the gym.
I think he's been semi kind of canceled.
He's had a lot of things.
Like, I think people are finally starting to be like, wait,
one real
maybe
big
we should
thing in his past.
Right.
Yeah.
We don't need to go over it here on the show. Google that if you want to, listener. But I think maybe we're starting to go back, pre Boogie Nights days and be like, who was this guy? And so they're still keeping this thing going, fellas. Transformers. I remember 2007 going to the theater to see the first one and being actually really surprised. Loved it. Saw it multiple times, I think, that summer. So was super excited for the second one. Which one was it? Revenge of the Fallen. Sorry. Gosh, I'm such an idiot.
You're
how dare you?
Up with. Yeah.
Just let's start the whole podcast over. Can we just start from the beginning?
All right. 3, 2. That one, though, yeah, I was very excited for it. And it was just, I remember going actually to the like premiere party for that or something. We were recording out there and it was like around the corner from the studio. Mm. But Linkin Park was playing like out in a parking lot of it.
Say you were pretty close with Mike Shinoda. So that,
and I remember going to the after party thing, and Michael Bay was standing there, and he had a group of people around him or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I actually remember
like a normal human, I assume.
No, like I thought he was going to be like super happy. This was after the movie, right? It's like they do the red carpet, they actually watch the movie, right? And then they had this big after party with. Media, people, fans, whatever. And so that's the thing we were at. And I remember the look on his face was just like staring into space, like that long stare. I don't know. You could just tell like the movie wasn't great or something. I just couldn't believe the look on his face. Cause like this guy just saw the sequel to Transformers. And why isn't he more? I just remember thinking, why isn't this guy more excited? Because I was so excited for that sequel. And then I saw that sequel, and I was like, okay, I realize why he wasn't so happy and excited, because this thing was a piece of crap. It was probably a ton of work. He knew it was going to make money. He's going to have to do another one. That was his life for that time. And these things have made money up until pretty much the last one, Revenge of the Texas Inventor. And then Bumblebee came out. Everybody really liked that one. Critics actually liked that one. It seemed like, okay, this needs some kind of reboot, but we don't know what that is. They give us Bumblebee. Everyone's like, okay, maybe this is the reboot that we've needed, that Transformers has needed, because we liked it before. Can we like it again? And then they do this. Guys, I don't know. I think, general thoughts, this should be so fun, and it's just not. So that's kind of where I fall on it. This has not been rebooted, reset from Michael Bay's original. I know he's a producer on this, and it's still kind of that thing, but like, let's move away from that. Is there no, put out a call in Hollywood, Hasbro, Paramount, Batman Shane, put out a call and be like, directors, producers, if you have a fresh take on Transformers, I want to hear it. And give me the most different, interesting take on this that there is. Because I'm sure there is one. Stephen Caple Jr., I understand they've signed him up for more. This has like 19 screenwriters on it. I just don't see how this like, quote unquote, vision is any kind of vision that motivates people.
He's not doing the next one, right? Because it was a tighter turnaround. Some other guy. Josh Cooley from Toy Story 4 is doing the next Transformers, which is a year away.
Jeez.
Same writers, though. Same
quick turnaround.
So I really honestly think this has potential to be a fun franchise, but it's just not, in my opinion. This movie was so boring. It doesn't make an ounce of sense in any way. And yeah, I think it's just so derivative of mainstream Hollywood blockbusters now. Yeah, I think this thing, I don't know if they probably thought it underperformed. $60 million, I would say, is an underperformance for a franchise that, has raked in $1 billion+ in the past. So certainly, okay, it's higher than Bumblebee, which was 2018, $20 million. Opening for that one.
Yeah.
That was Christmas weekend. So it's probably heavy competition. Bumblebee ended up making $500 million at the end of the day. This one will probably make around that, if not a little more. But I don't see this one making $1 billion. Maybe it does. The last one that did was 2014. So we're now a decade since then. I think this could use some kind of hard reset. But Brian, I'll pass it to you on background and where you stand on Transformers in 2023.
Yeah, I mean, the good news is It's a lot better than I think all of the Transformers sequels, like the Michael Bay proper Transformers sequels. The bad news of that is that those are some of the worst movies ever. So
right.
It's not really the standard that we are necessarily going for. I think the worst news for this thing is that this was supposed to be the reset, Kent. This was supposed to be the movie that was gonna kind of take us away from the Bay Transformers movies and let us get to a place where the Transformers movies can be a little more fun, a little more well put together, more thought out, all that kind of stuff. And I don't think that worked super.
It's the exact same production design as the original ones. Peter Cullen still Optimus Prime. I know that's probably he probably should be,
right?
But Michael Bay is still an executive producer. Like, it's got some different people in it, but sure. That's because it's in 1994 and it's a prequel kind of thing. It's the same exact universe. I want Transformers in a different. I want to go from like what X-Men did. Or first time around to what First Class did. Like, give me a different universe of Transformers. Give me a different take on this.
Right.
Maybe it's animated. I don't know.
That would be something. I don't think that this is a terrible, terrible movie, but it's one of the more disappointing movies of the year for me because I felt like I really liked Bumblebee a lot. I thought that was the right vibe. I thought it had the right mix of action, comedy. It had, Haley Steinfeld's kind of a star, so that helped a little bit. But, like, there seemed like a purpose behind that movie beyond just it's going to make $1 billion. And that, I think, had been missing since the first Transformers. The first, you know, Coop's really into Transformers right now. I was never a Transformers kid. So these movies don't have any real nostalgia pull for me. He'll get into a kick where he wants to watch these movies. So we rewatched maybe the first three, I don't know, a few months ago. And that first one annoys me because there's like, it's a B or a B plus movie. And it really feels like it could be much better than that with a capable director and a screenplay that mattered, like even in the slightest, you know. And in even still knowing, like, gosh, this is as good as it's going to get is so rough. I don't have any nostalgia for these, but I'm totally happy to. I enjoyed watching the first one for the first time, and I'm fine with it when Coop wants to watch that first movie. This is just another one in the line of these movies that it feels like, guys, what are we doing? What are we doing in the writer's room when we're putting this thing together? It feels like there's no identity. It feels like they don't know what the audience is looking for when they go to see these movies. And it becomes, this one especially, just becomes just sort of half-assed. And I don't know, it's not like I'm expecting this to be like Sorkin or something, you know. It's just very basic, decent would make the action stuff work well, right? Like we could get by with a C+ script, right? We could probably and B to B+ actors and talent. We could get by with. It could be a fun time at the movies, and It wasn't super that for me. So I liked the first 30 minutes fine. I liked the last 30 minutes fine. The hour in between legitimately almost fell asleep at one point.
Yeah, so boring. And it was so brutal. Much talking. And
it was brutal. Yeah.
So. Oh, family drama or whatever. Just we don't care. This is Rise of the Beasts. Richard, where do you stand on Transformers?
So I was not a Transformers kid as well at all. I remember being very like, seeing that first one and being like, oh, that was a really fun, not being excited for it. Buddy kind of drugged me to it and then enjoying it a lot. Some of that was to do with Megan Fox, but not all of it. Then didn't care for any of the sequels at all. Like you guys. So I went and saw this today and remember going to see Bumblebee, but remember nothing about it. Cause it's been 6 years or 5 years or whatever. And was so confused. It's like, I don't even know if this was good or bad because I had no idea what was going on half the time. It was like, I felt like I had not done the homework. And I was like, maybe I didn't see Bumblebee. Maybe I sat that episode out. I was like, I'm going to have to go through my like credit card statements from like 2018 to see if I
saw Movie like, pass receipt.
Right, exactly. Like I was like, but then I read, like when I was done, I read the Wikipedia and I was like, no, I saw this, but it was like, I don't know why my brain just rinsed it out. And so I wish it would rinse this one out too. So like, not that it's Tenet, but I just was so, I felt like I missed like one of those, like, you know, those 10 minute IMAX teasers or something. I was, there was like mythology I was missing.
Yeah.
And then it would be, I'd have that feeling like, oh, I'm the idiot here. And then, because I don't follow the property or whatever. And then it'd be the dumbest, like Pete Davidson 10 minutes ever. So it was weird. I don't know. It felt very, it felt like it was written by seven people. And it in fact was. So, yeah, these are like really cynical blockbuster things. They just are giant robots hitting each other with weird mythology. And they know that they'll make a certain amount of money. Go with God, Paramount. But to your point, Ken, it feels so Bayish, but without even any of his verve. It's like paint by numbers, Michael Bay.
Yeah.
And just going, am I getting too old? That was like my main thing. Am I not following this? Am I the old guy watching Star Wars now or something? I don't know. But the answer, of course, is yes. But yeah.
Yeah, I think, obviously these are a means to an end to sell toys, right? These are produced by Hasbro. The main reason these come out is so they can launch the next Transformers toy line. Brian, your son is super into these probably for that very reason, right? They resonate with the, young boys and, you know, preteen middle school kids really well. And these certainly have a wide appeal and I feel like they can be so much more fun. And that is a disappointment because where was the Linkin Park in this one? I mean, what are we doing? So I'm very confused because there are so many fun scenes in the original Transformers film about how these things transform, right? This thing is the Skull Transformers. I don't know. Did the Decepticons come down and see a gorilla and then transform into that? Were they always gorillas? I don't know. I don't care. It makes very little sense to me why they chose like a scorpion to be of all thing. It is what it is, to the point of this being a Hasbro thing. They all get in a boardroom. Okay, everyone, time to think of another Transformers movie. What can we do this time? Well, let's look at the Hasbro IP. We've got, let's see here. Oh, we've got Inspector Gadget. Nope, can't cross that over. We've got Beast Wars. Could we make, we can make that work. Yeah, that sounds good. What about G.I. Joe? So it's one of those things. Is this supposed to feel authentic? Because this, to me, like I said, talk about derivative blockbusters. I don't know if you can get more of like a derivative than this in terms of the inspiration of the story.
Yeah.
I just can't fathom somebody being like, guys, I'm just so convicted.
You cracked it. Yeah.
Right. I am so convicted with this key that's left in 1994 that I can't sleep. And I have got to show this vision has to get out there. You know, like I'm saying.
I think that really gets at the core of why these suck. I feel like we're seeing this with more and more movies now because every movie is part of a cinematic franchise or a universe or whatever. Used to say about Fast and the Furious movies, and I don't anymore. I think they've lost over the last couple, but used to say they have an identity. They know their identity. They know the identity of their audience, and they really stick to those things. And I love that about those like 5 through 8 maybe of the Fast movies. Over the last couple, one of my big complaints about Fast X and somewhat about Fast 9 was that it's getting too much into the mythology of these characters, and there's not a mythology that matters. So, and I feel like that's what we're seeing with more and more of these franchise type movies is they are so obsessed with self-mythologizing every part of the plot and the script possibly in part because they've covered all the ground that they can cover with the action and the, you know, the whatever. That's why I thought this one, that's why this one feels more like a missed opportunity than some of the others, is because it is an opportunity to reset. In the fifth Bay Transformer movie, if you guys remember this, they literally got to a place where the Transformers were responsible for the Sword and the Stone. Like, they're literally remember Drunk Merlin is in the fifth movie, and no one is asking for this. No one wants this. And I thought that with this movie, there's a real opportunity to kind of do away with all that stuff. Not that I'm dying for an origin story, but in this case, sort of an origin story would have been a much more, I think, a fruitful endeavor to get into. And instead, it turns into this movie's version of the AllSpark, you know? And maybe somebody who's like a hardcore Transformers nerd is like, yeah, I really love the mythology of it. I don't think that is 95% of the audience. I think for the most part, if you could just have fun action scenes, I think you're right, Kent, that they I would like to see a production design, I don't even know, a redo, but just like a slight reset to where it doesn't look, they don't look the exact same as they have.
I just pulled up the file from
20 years.
From 2007, yeah, and they give it a new little texture on this one, and it's kind of the same. It's the same exact. If Shia LaBeouf popped up in this, it would not be weird.
Exactly.
And I want it to feel weird. Right, if Shia LaBeouf pops up in it, you know?
Do a slightly different version of it. Make the story a little, like, bring in the gorillas. What do we call the beasts? That's fine. I think that's a good idea, generally speaking. But there didn't, again, going back to the well of this like big thing that's the mythology of the Transformers. I just don't think anyone really cares about that, and I wish that you would spend some time instead crafting a script that's fun. This is not a fun script, and maybe casting a couple of actors that are not so dull on.
Does
on
this screen. Thing need a big name actor?
I don't does think this it does. Need I just a, think it Wahlberg. Needs it needs a couple of actors that are engaging and charismatic, and I don't know if Anthony Ramos is that, but I really don't think it's Dominique. I mean, maybe, look, in her defense, like, this is a terrible script, especially for her character. But what is she doing to elevate that? I would say very, very little. And I would say that's not far off the same thing for Anthony Ramos. It's just, I don't think you need to cast Brad Pitt or whatever in these movies. I just think you need to spend some time on the script and get a... I think that's part of why Bumblebee worked, is because it was relatively self-contained.
And it was felt like, fun. Okay.
And Haley Steinfeld is charismatic. And
right.
All of these things. And they did... it felt like they learned none of the lessons that you should take away from Bumblebee.
And it felt like, okay, let's... how can we reset this? Let's isolate the story on one major character and kind of do like a more of a self-contained story with a really charismatic female lead and a big name that could probably lead this on his own in kind of a supporting role. I think that was a really smart choice, and to go away from that because it didn't make as much as they wanted to, I guess that's why they went away from it. Why did they?
I guess. I don't know. I just Not a, that's a kind of a classic Hollywood, you learned all the wrong lessons kind of thing.
And
it's
right.
Just kind of, it's very frustrating.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I said, it seemed like they had the reset we wanted figured out, and it seemed like they reverted back to, honestly, a style of cinema that I feel like is outdated at this point. I feel like we can do more interesting things. And this series peaked really early. For us to go from that sequence in Transformers with the helicopter landing on the military base and transforming and taking everybody out, I remember being blown away by that. When I saw, I was like, what is, this is going to be awesome, right? Mm-hmm. Then there's nothing as cool as that in this entire freaking series since that one scene. And it seemed like they had some great ideas right out the gate for some cool sequences, and they just haven't been able to come up with anything compelling. There's kind of a fun sequence where they're kind of rolling down the mountain in this one. That was semi-fun. But they've learned all the wrong lessons. We don't need racial stereotype Transformers. I'm tired of that being a thing.
That has literally plagued this franchise from the jump. Like, come on, please stop doing this.
That has to be. Gotta have a taco truck Transformer, guys. Whatever it was, I don't know. That was bad. Stop. You're right, Brian. This is not the worst of the series. This is probably the best sequel. Which one of them was it? Was it Age of Extinction or The Last Night, where they like run over the Bud Light truck and it's just like it turns into a Bud Light commercial for like 20 seconds?
I don't know. I don't remember, but
geez. There was one of them that was like, honestly, I don't know, every minute there was some kind of product placement. Yeah. It was like, remember, it was like, what about this Beats pill? Could you transform into that? It was like ridiculous.
But again, that just makes me feel like, gosh, why did we do this? Like, what was the point of this sort of, I don't know if you'd say a hard reset, but halfway reset, if we're just going to go back to the well of what I guess worked financially, but certainly did not work creatively and really, honestly, financially, that's part of why we're doing this. It's why we're having to do a reset. Because Last Night made $600 million, whereas the one before that had made over $1 billion, you know? And at a certain point, the audiences caught up to, all right, these are freaking terrible, and they stopped going to see them, not at least in the numbers that they had previously, and that's why we have a long break between these those movies and this movie, and we're doing the research. Like, can we please just do it right? Can we please try to do something that is broad and reaches mass audiences and does well in China and all these things, but just is like above the level of competence? Like, can we just be competent? That's all. I think that's all I'm asking for.
Let's do your part, ma'am, fam. When the family is like, hey, Father's Day, what should we go see? Do your part, and maybe you've seen Across the Spider-Verse, but go see it again, right? Go see things that you want more of. At least in the style of things you want more of, right? Support the storytelling that you want more of, and don't support the stuff you want less of. I think, you know, if there's any kind of revolt on this financially, I think that's enough for them to reset it, right? But there's not gonna be. If this thing bounces back and makes more than Bumblebee, sign them up for two more at least, right? Three more. Right. So we need to do our part and spread the word of, hey, there's other stuff. There's better stuff out here. Guardians is still out, right? I mean, Pixar's releasing a movie this weekend. I think there's gonna be a better, you know, something better to support than Transformers when it's all said and done. So, I don't blame anyone for, you know, got to take the kid out to see a movie type thing. But I mean, we got to put our foot down somewhere, you know, fellas. And this might be the line.
You're saying this is it. This is where we got to draw the line.
This might be the line. I mean, I'm all for cliches, right? You know, they can be fun. We talk about them on the show. The file scenes, overshirts. A lot of overshirts in this one, by the way. Did not count them. Probably should have. But I found another cliche that we've never talked about on the podcast before, Felvis. Very excited about it. It's called Chaotic Breakfast.
Also the name of our prog rock band that Kent and I started.
That's a great band name. Man, yeah, I'm in. I'm going to start learning guitar right now. Yeah.
We need to intro these characters. Oh, we need to show them having breakfast. The mom is super stressed. Always. Yeah. You know, pancake batter's flying around.
And then it's always like, you don't have to make papers everywhere. You'd be less stressed if you didn't start your day with a 2.5 hour cooking routine.
That's a running joke with my wife and I because of the OC. If you ever watch the OC, every freaking episode starts with Sandy Cohen just got done surfing for 2 hours, and then I guess came in and spent 3 hours making breakfast. I mean, the spread in that in the Cohen household is unbelievable every morning.
A lot of people don't know, as a lawyer, Sandy, he works 1 p.m. to 9.
Yeah. It takes 2 hours to clean the kitchen after breakfast.
I want to say, these are not accurate family breakfast depictions. We need a yelling at the kid and nuking a sausage biscuit scene in a movie. Yeah. That's a little more.
Get your powdered donuts out of the bag, dude.
That's exactly. But chaotic breakfast, did not realize that was a cliche until this movie. I was like, gosh, I have seen this so many times before that it all came, I don't know, straight into focus during that moment in Rise of the Beasts.
We had it in this week's throwback episode too, so that was nice.
Oh, very chaotic breakfast in last Action Hero. So this art forgery expert, I'm not even going to go there with how, I don't know, how many things there I could call out. I'm not going to. Why did the clue look exactly like the Maltese Falcon? Are they trying to like say something with these? Comment on film history in some way?
Duh, man. These are a love letter to cinema, Kent.
This is a film.
Yeah, this is a
shot. Shot on a SD card.
No, I mean, look, before you go further on these things, like I think that we try pretty hard not to nitpick. I know that's something that I'm not coming out trying to nitpick at every little flaw, because every movie, it's a movie, that's you know, it's gonna be some of that stuff. It's the job of the movie, I've said this many times, but it's the job of the movie to make your brain not think about those threads that you could pull at. And this is a great example of a movie that just not only chooses not to distract your brain from pulling at the threads, but like kind of encourages you to pull at the threads. Cause it's just, come on, man. Like, what are we?
Because they keep resetting it.
Yeah.
It's not like there's some shield organization, some through line throughout these where we just know, okay, this character's got this uniform on, it means this. And this is their motivate, right? So we keep having to try to figure out, who are these people? What's their background? Are they qualified to do this?
Right.
You know, all of that kind of stuff. We have to figure that. It resets every single movie. Mm-hmm. And so I was nitpicking, all of it apart. Right. Because I had to learn it all again. So that's frustrating. There's no recurring characters in this other than freaking Optimus Prime, which is fine. Or Bumblebee, I guess. Bumblebee, yeah. You want to call it that. But yeah, I don't know at this point why they don't just put all their chips in and say, and work up to some kind of Transformers Avengers style movie that it's going to have Shia. It's going to have Megan Fox. It's going to have Wahlberg. It's going to have this dude. It's going to have Haley, right? Just do it all. Just go and, you know, get everybody going with the trailer, one last ride, and then completely reset this thing.
It'll happen.
Yeah, you gotta.
Somebody in the Discord said something about like the timelines couldn't work. Dude, they're like one Optimus Prime speech away from being like, this allows us to transform to any place in time where humans need our intervention. That's all you need to say. Boom.
I think it might be more that you need to let the soft canceling of Shia kind of settle in before you bring him back in the fold. But yeah, no, I mean, I'm sure that kind of thing is coming.
This are so destroyed.
Yes.
Totally. Like, I just don't care at all. Like, cool. Yeah. Can the world explode? That sounds awesome. Like, if it's this world, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
I don't have anything invested.
Right.
Yeah, Shia is still, to his credit, the most memorable character in this entire series. I think he's still like the Marty McFly of this franchise. So, you know, if they wanted to come back, I'm sure it would make more money, you know, just with him being in the trailer and that storyline continuing. I'm sure people would be interested in that. One line that stuck out to me that I have to get out here. You'll be saving the world. Actually, you'll be saving two worlds. That was my
sick
favorite. And only the Transformers franchise would cast Michelle Yeoh, Academy Award winner Michelle Yeoh, in a role in which you don't see her, and she's the voice of a Falcon Transformer. Would have liked to, you know, this could have starred her.
Yeah,
would have been
Beasts
probably
pretty
better.
Cool, but they're basically don't come into the movie.
They're in like 7 seconds.
I mean, it's
yeah, it's the Age of Extinction thing where they tease the dinosaurs the whole time and they're in it for 7 seconds.
And they come in the midst of, to your point, Richard, like the plot, the majority of this movie feels like it is written by 7 people because it is. When you really bring the beasts in, it really is like one guy wrote one scene, another guy wrote the next scene, another guy wrote the next scene. So there's like, it's not even that they're competing against each other. They're just all, it's so haphazardly patched together and kind of poorly edited. And so you end up feeling like, well, I don't even care anymore. Even if I thought that this could have been a cool part of it. And instead I'm just like, all right, let's move along. Let's get out.
But I bet it was like one guy wrote the story. One guy wrote all the teenager dialogue, like the human dialogue. One guy wrote all the transformer dialogue because it's such a specific dialect or language, right? One guy wrote like the slangy stuff, right? Probably the funny. You got to have some comedy writers in there too to get some jokes in. So yeah, it's just, can we not just have one guy coming out of UCLA that's just like, man, love Transformers. Here's my take on it. And it's funny. Or get Lord Miller to do this or something. I don't know.
Yeah, there we go.
Somebody needs to be some kind of, it needs to be fun. Speaking of humor, got to get your thoughts. Pete Davidson as Mirage.
At least I didn't have to look at him. That was a plus.
I prefer looking at him than hearing him.
I don't. I can't take him seriously as a human being. I can't. I just don't.
He doesn't make you want to get Taco Bell for breakfast?
Or Smart Water or whatever. I mean, like every freaking commercial. No, I don't understand him as the spokesman, but maybe they're not selling to me. Yeah, it kind of hurt my soul a little bit when we left the theater and Coop was like, who was your favorite Transformer in that movie? You know, which is just a classic, you know, 10-year-old question. You're like, bro, I just was trying to stay awake, you know, and you got to, I don't know, probably Bumblebee or Optimus or whatever. He's like, yeah, Bumblebee's my favorite, but my favorite new Transformer was Mirage. I'm just like, okay, bud, yeah, sounds good. moving along with it.
You're going to have to spend actual dollars that you earned, Brian, on a Mirage Hasbro figure. They are just fist pumping in the boardroom right now. Like, it worked!
What if Coop was just like, I don't know what it is about him, but he's got that BDE, you know? Mirage does.
Okay, I'd respect that.
You got to respect it. Total alpha.
Yeah.
That was my next question. Did it work for Coop? Does it work for dumb? Not that he's dumb for a 10-year-old, but dumber than us. 10-year-olds like it?
Yeah, I was off yesterday, so I took him and two of his friends to see it. And they all dug it, but I think that they were just as bored as I was in the middle hour. I'm kind of looking over at them and they didn't look like they were super locked in. It helps that the movie ends on a high. Like the last 30 minutes is, you know, actiony and, you know, pretty relatively fun as far as these things go. And so you get to leave the theater being like, oh yeah, that was a good time. The middle hour, I could tell they were all kind of like, all right, let's move it along here.
Davidson described voicing Mirage as, quote, Jim Carrey's The Mask meets Bugs Bunny, end quote.
Okay. That's a thing that, I mean, all 10-year-olds that I know are, A, they are all in on The Mask, and B, they are all in on Bugs Bunny at this point. Yeah. Space Jam,
I would say,
great, you know,
this character will probably go down the annals of cinematic history the way those two characters have too. Like the Oscar montage, it'll be Casablanca, Jim Carrey spinning in the mask costume, and then straight into Mirage, fist bumping Optimus.
I mean, I would put it just as like that character and everything about is fine. It's far from one of the bigger sins of this movie. It's like, if you just have that exact same character, same voice, same everything, but the script is plucked up a little bit.
What if it's voiced by Awkwafina, though?
I'm fine with
that. And we get a rap. Does that up it for you, Brian?
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm the sole voice in the wilderness saying that wasn't the worst part of Little Mermaid. We can have
it's the worst part of my year. It's been a rough year. Dozens. And that was the worst kid. Part.
Dozens. Yeah.
Wah, 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 wah. All right. I don't know where we go from here, but apparently they know where they're going to go from here because the tease at the end, spoiler alert.
Okay. Tease kind of works.
Transformers Rise of the Planet of the Beasts. G.I. Joe crossover.
G.I. Joe.
Okay. Yep. Okay. Here we go.
They're insisting on that being a thing. How many times have they rebooted that? Let's okay, see. Look. Six, look, seven, eight.
Listen, you're right.
Nine times?
You're right. And I know that it's a 90% chance that's going to be awful. Kind of worked for me. In the moment, I was like, oh, okay, here we go. We're going to do this G.I. Joe thing again. We got another chance to make this right.
Here's an idea for you, Brian.
Uh-huh.
This will pique your interest.
Current Brendan Fraser again?
In this? Oh, well, obviously. But as the whale.
Back in the makeup.
Just stumbling around.
We need his whale character in other franchises. Like he needs.
I agree. I
like
the character.
The Jungle reboot as the whale.
I did not care for the movie, but I like the character. We need more of him and stuff. Clerks 6, you know, with the whale.
You know what else? Yeah. Other big billion-dollar franchise with Paramount, right? Top Gun. You know, yeah. Starscream is also a fighter jet.
There you go.
Okay.
Maybe Tom Cruise walks into a hangar, you know, he's going to go take it out for a ride, and then all of a sudden, what's this? A Decepticon logo in my jet? And then you got like 20 more movies there.
I got another one for you. Huge Paramount franchise. Multiple properties. Universe blending type thing, but this has its own universe. Sheldon.
He hops into the jet and he gets bazinga'd.
Yeah. Multiple timelines of Sheldon. Uh-huh. You can go young and middle-aged Sheldon. What do you think of that, Kent? It's Paramount.
You guys ready for grades?
Yeah, I'll grade this.
F minus minus minus.
Wow.
Wow. Yeah.
Man.
Can't do it. This is not it. I saw it at like a 95% audience score.
Yeah. It's
got to up our standards.
It's kind of doing pretty good.
We have to demand greatness. We've talked about a lot of blockbusters here. There's been some bad ones this year. This one's the worst for me by a fair stretch. And yeah, we need to demand better. F minus minus minus. Put my foot down. What you got,
Brian? It's hardcore, man. It's hardcore. I'll go. I think the first 30's fine. Last 30's pretty solid. Soundtrack was like expected, but still like there's some decent selection in there on the needle drops. It wasn't
Wu-Tang. I like that.
Yeah, we had some Wu-Tang. I think we had some Tribe Called Quest. There was a little There's some good stuff in there. It wasn't Imagine Dragons, the 90, or I guess it wasn't Candlebox or something. Middle hours, really brutal. I'll give it a C. I'll give it a C. How about you, Richard?
I'll split the difference. I'm going to give it a D minus.
Okay.
All right. There you go. Transformers, The Rise of the Beasts. I'm sure we'll be back to talk more Transformers at some point.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
For now, let's hit a weekly recommend, fellas.
Weekly recommend.
What you got for us this week, Richard?
I have got a book for you, friends. Romans Country. Let me pull up my list here. I've got... Oh, yeah. I did actually a film book every once in a while. I mix one of those in. This is a cool one. It's my favorite classic movie. Kent, this is very up your alley. This is... I don't want to mispronounce the name. It's Algin Harmetz is the author, and it's The Making of Casablanca. And it's a big, big, full, comprehensive really making of that film and everything that entailed. It had some stuff that I didn't know. I'm pretty well versed on that movie. I wouldn't say I'm classic movie guys to Kent's level, but I know what I know, and I'm interested in a lot of different things. And there was a lot of revelatory things in this. So yeah, that's my week of recommend of the week. I liked it quite a bit, and man, that movie's good.
Nice.
It is classic. Side recommend. Have you started to watch this 100 Years of Warner Brothers series?
No, I haven't.
Really? Good.
I need to. Yeah.
Yeah. It's really, I've only watched the first, two. So I'm right up to Kubrick era.
Yeah.
But yeah, the Casablanca stuff in there is great.
Awesome.
Rebel Without a Cause. The fact that they built that whole set in that whole cafe, like in a soundstage,
is
incredible.
It's wild.
All right. What you got, Brian?
I want to recommend an album. I haven't yet gotten to dig into
the Human Jason Clay.
Isbell. Yeah. Have you guys heard this? Pretty great.
Hold me now.
Yeah, when you're 6 feet from the ledge, just want to tell you. I haven't gotten into Isbell album yet, and I haven't listened to the Foo Fighters album yet. I popped into Spotify last week intending to click on the Isbell album, and it served me up Rufus Wainwright's newest album, Folkocracy. And I was like, yeah, I'll give that a shot for a few minutes before I start Isbell, and it's so good. I love it. I love it. I know Richard's listened to it a little bit too. Mm-hmm. All folk songs. They're all covers. You know, a lot of them are like really old traditional folk songs and even lullabies and stuff like that. There's a couple that were skips for me, but for the most part, like he has incredible guests, Brandi Carlile and Andrew Bird and
John Legend and.
Yeah, John Legend, that song with John Legend's great.
Mm-hmm.
Something that Richard and I share is a hatred for David Byrne, and mm-hmm. the David Byrne song
that's a great song.
My favorite on the album. It's so good.
David Byrne's greatness. You need to go on a deep dive, I'm telling you.
I've done the deep dive.
I've tried. I've tried many times. My wife was really into Talking Heads, and I'm just like, this is fine if it's in a, like the background of a TV show, and I cannot stand it otherwise. Might be my favorite song on the album is the one that he does with David Byrne. High on a Rocky Ledge. So it's great. Rufus Wainwright is great. I've been on a big, I started out this year saying I had like 6 or 8 artists and bands that I was like, these are all artists or bands that I would say, oh yeah, I really like them, but that I don't know their whole discography and haven't really dug past, you know, their top 10 or 20 songs. And I was like, that was one of my resolutions, was to like really dig through some of these bands and artists, and he's the only one that I've followed through on so far. So great job with the resolution, but I've been listening to a ton of his
albums. Poses is such a good album, man.
Poses is incredible. He's got such it's a strange discography. You find some really weird
like, there's like the Shakespeare sonnet album.
Some really strange stuff in there. But this is awesome. I mean, it might be my favorite album of the year. Might be my favorite of all of his works. So Rufus Wainwright, it's called Folkocracy. I think it came out at the end of April or something, maybe May. So but check that out. It's really good. I if you're at all into his voice and
Baroque or, and pop or, folk.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's a big market, right? This honestly, it might be a pretty decent entry point if you're like, I don't know who that is,
or sure.
I've only heard him on the Garden State soundtrack or something like that. I think you get a pretty great taste of he. This is the last thing I'll say. He's somebody who can sing a song that I hate. Like he did. What was the song he did for the Christmas album, Richard, a few years
ago?
Baby, it's cold outside.
Yeah, it's so incredible.
Hate that song so much. The version that he did is unbelievably good. His voice,
when he goes up
so
a key
cool.
for the last third of that song, you're just like, whoa, this
love
guy's
it
sick.
So much. So
yeah,
this might be a decent entry point if you're at all curious about. And then he has, I don't know, 40 albums that you can dig into afterwards of all just kind of all over the place. So check that out.
That's bucket head level.
Yeah, it's a lot. You look at the Spotify and you're like, geez, man, I don't know how I'm going to get through all this. And I haven't, but there's a lot of really good stuff. And there's stuff in there that you'll be like, oh, nope.
Unfollow the Rules, which was a record he did a couple years ago. It was really good, too. He's like having a late renaissance.
Right. He's very prolific. So.
The Rufusissance. Well, unless his name's Rufus. Not enough more, dude's name.
Rufus. Yeah, need Rufus more Rufuses. That's why people are just realizing. That was the name. This guy's name is awesome. I'm going to check him out.
My stepdad always gave the name Rufus at any restaurant when they asked for his name. And it always made me laugh.
Yeah. Great name.
It's good. All right. I'm going to recommend, it's a little topical this week for a few reasons. Went and saw it in theater this past weekend. First time I'd seen it in theater, but Cormac McCarthy passed away today. Sucks. And I saw No Country for Old Men on Saturday for the first time in at a screening. Such a great movie. I don't know why in the year of our Lord 2023 that there'd still be someone out there listening to the show that's not seen No Country for Old Men.
To be clear, you've seen it before, but you saw
it. Oh, yeah, I had seen it.
Not familiar.
Multiple times. And so, yeah, just on the big screen was just blown away once again. I mean, I had never seen it on like a great sound system. And I mean, the violence and like the gun blasts and everything in like a real theater was incredible. But for sure, if you've never seen that movie, or just watch it again, No Country for Old Men. Great movie written by Cormac McCarthy, the book, and they based it on that. A lot of the same story. So yeah, RIP Cormac. Thanks for the great source material. All right. There's the main feed episode. We're going to take a little break, make some coffee, and come back and talk Last Action Hero. So join us there, VIPs. And until next week, I think we're talking Pixar. I'm Kent. For Brian and Richard, we'll see you at the cinema. Goodbye.
Hey, baby, I hear the blues are calling. Toss salads and scrambled eggs. And maybe I seem a bit confused. Yeah, maybe, but I got you pegged. But I don't know what to do with those tossed salads and scrambled eggs. They're calling again. Scrambled eggs all over my face.
They're making me yah-yah. The salads and scrambled eggs.
They're calling again.